Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on illegal immigration right after this. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage, and the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. The Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press of political and social activities free from government surveillance. Now, I wished I would have thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, our princes and our politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, and more gun control. But you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years. That's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts. It doesn't come from our political process, our politicians, lawyers, or bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either," because the real power in America is in our courts. It's not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. Remember, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Our school, Courtroom Strategy and Procedures, available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org. All right, we've been talking about illegal immigration and its effects on all of us. Last time we were talking about the population growth, which is headed to 1 billion here in the United States by the year 2075. If we keep up the same pace of immigration, that is legal and illegal immigration that's coming into the country today, our population will hit 1 billion in 65 more years. We talked about the alien criminal costs. It costs billions to store all of these aliens in our jails. 25% of the people locked up in our jails today, 25%, 500,000 prisoners out of 2 million are Hispanic. The government is systematically destroying business in America. And in California, where we have the highest number of illegal immigrants, the economy is out of balance by nearly $20 billion, and that $20 billion represents the loss caused by the 3 million immigrants. Then we took a look at the costs that are equal to the budget deficit in California and went through the numbers. And how many are there? Well, the government tells us that there's 11 or 12 million, and two other sources tell us it's 20 million plus, and another one says it's 7 million a year plus. So I've been taking the lowest number, that is the official numbers that the government gives us, and the 12 million number, and been extrapolating from that. And what are the results that we're getting from all of this unbridled immigration? So far, it's all bad, but it's getting worse as we progress. Now, here's another little factoid. We've enacted a lot of legislation here in the United States to benefit blacks who are a minority in our country. And because they were slaves, it's been decided by our politicians, and I guess most of us, that these people needed an edge. They needed some kind of a mandate that would give them an edge so that they could catch up. So, unfortunately, it doesn't end here. As noted in the start of the section, immigration is at an all-time high for other negative impacts on black Americans. Let's note the following article by Nathan Birchfell of CNS News. It's called "Affirmative Action Helps Immigrants Above the Descendants of the Slaves." A new study suggests that black immigrants benefit from affirmative action policies in the United States more than the descendants of the slaves or African Americans who suffered under the Jim Crow laws, for which the affirmative action legislation was enacted in the first place. The findings published in the American Journal of Education suggest that the original goal of affirmative action policies, to right past wrongs and to provide opportunities to disadvantaged groups, is not being met because the policies focus on race instead of heritage. Written by researchers from Princeton University and the University of Pennsylvania, the study found that while first or second generation immigrants make up only 13% of the 18 to 19-year-old black population, they comprise 27% of black freshmen entering 28 top colleges and universities. So blacks in general don't comprise a very large percentage in our colleges and universities anyway. It was designed, these affirmative action pieces of legislation were designed to give a leg up to those who were the descendants of the slaves in the country. And as it turns out, it aids the Nigerians, Namibians, and the Ugandans that come to the country by a rate of 2-1 over what it benefits the people who are suffering here for which the legislation was created in the first place. Now, the difference was most startling at the Ivy League level, where immigrant blacks comprise more than 40% of the incoming black population. So when you're going to Harvard, Yale, or Princeton, it's 40%, not 27. Now, as this section has detailed, the massive immigration, legal and illegal, that has been going on for the last 20 years has not, on balance, been good for America. While some businesses have enjoyed better bottom-line profits, it has been subsidized by the taxpayers, and it has occurred at the expense of American workers, and it has especially hit the working poor and the uneducated workers. So in our society where we have uneducated and working poor, it has created a disproportionate burden upon them. And in fact, taxes in general create a disproportionate burden on the poor versus the rich. Now, I've pointed this out before, but let's look at it again. The poor, when they're asked, do you want socialized medicine at the expense of Henry Ford and Bill Gates, will always tell you, yes, 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 the rich need to pay their fair share. And as I've pointed out before, the rich don't pay tax. Only you, the poor, pay tax. And every time you fall for this socialist line, let's take it from the rich and give it to you, they're really taking it from you. These socialist policies are designed by Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and George Soros to enrich them at your expense. But when they make the presentation, they come to you and they say, look, George Soros, Warren Buffett, and Bill Gates have health insurance. That's preposterous poppycock. Those guys don't buy health insurance. They're self-insured. They've got plenty of money. The last thing they're going to do is line the insurance company's pockets by buying insurance. Insurance is for the poor, and it is designed to impoverish the poor and keep them there. Now let's wake up and smell the coffee. So when Barack Obama came to you and he said, okay, now let's have national health care insurance, and we're going to lay this on the rich, and we're going to lay this on business. Business, McDonald's is not going to pay $75,000 a year to buy insurance for their 30 employees. They're going to raise the price of their product, just like Wendy's, McDonald's, Burger King, Sonic. They're all going to raise their prices, a nickel for hamburgers and a dime for soft drink. And you, the people that frequent those restaurants, are going to pay that tax, every dime of it. Now, that's the way that game is played. Furthermore, when you hear the swan song of the immigrants, they pay taxes, and they're paying their way. If this was 1900, the answer would be, yes, that's true. But in a social welfare state, it isn't true. As I pointed out before, the immigrants and the illegals are putting in a dollar in taxes and taking out three in benefits. And the two big benefits that they're benefiting from at your expense is public school and public medicine or public health care. Now, there's a third area that's coming into view here, education. In this education game, the legislation designed to benefit the minorities that lived here in America, that is mainly the blacks, are now benefiting the black immigrants and the other immigrants that are coming in, taking advantage of the educational system, which is being paid for by you, the taxpayers. And remember, the taxes are paid by the poor, not by the rich. Now, this out-of-control population growth in the United States, fueled by out-of-control legal and illegal immigration, will cause the population to double in about 50 years. There are very few things that this will not dramatically impact. Your city will need twice as many freeways or expensive and greatly subsidized mass transportation projects. More people means more infrastructure. We will need twice as many coal and nuclear power electric utility plants. The water and sanitation systems as well as waste disposal facilities will have to double. So as these immigrants come in, if you double the population of Los Angeles County over the next 50 years, you're going to need twice as much water, twice as much electricity, twice as many roads and freeways, twice as many schools, twice as many of everything that's out there. Now, if everybody is paying their fair share, then that would be fine. But again, the immigrants are undereducated, disadvantaged, and for every dollar of tax they pay in, they take out $3 worth of benefits. Now, that's where that game is being played. So who's going to pay for all of this? Well, it's not the immigrants, as they're mostly uneducated and will stay that way, and they are net receivers of tax money. So that means then that the cost will be borne by the under-attack middle class, and there's no other way around it. Tax rates will have to be significantly increased in order to pay for all of this. So if you think your taxes aren't high enough today, stand by, because they're going to go up. Now, for some new video on the subject for the author of The Case Against Immigration, you can see Illegal Immigration and the Numbers Pure and Simple, Part 1 and Part 2. For more information on the impacts of illegal immigration on American society, see The Hidden Cost of Illegal Immigration and California is the Dim Picture of America's Future. For a personal perspective on the dramatic change that's taking place, see Victor Davis Hanson's recent article, Mexifornia, 5 years later, where he notes that during the heyday of multiculturalism and political correctness in the 1980s, the response of us, the hosts, to this novel challenge was not to insist upon the traditional assimilation of the newcomer, but rather to accommodate the illegal alien with official Spanish language documents, bilingual education, and ethnic boosterism in our media, politics, and education. These responses only encouraged more illegals to come, on the guarantee that their material life could be better and yet their culture unchanged here in the United States. We now see the results. Los Angeles is today the second largest Mexican city in the world. One out of every 10 Mexican nationals resides in the United States, the vast majority of them illegal. Now think about that. 10% of the nation of Mexico lives in the United States. Now that's pretty significant. And they expect us to meet their bilingual needs. We need to speak Spanish. They don't need to assimilate and speak English. Now it's true there are two big, large American communities in Mexico. One's at Guadalajara, the other's in Mexico City. But the Mexican government doesn't furnish bilingual letters and text and books, you know, to accommodate English or Americans in Mexico. Now, why we would do that here is beyond me, but we have, for whatever reason. And we have. And as a result of that, now we're importing this Mexican culture to the United States. In other words, we're turning America into North Mexico. Now, is that what you wanted? If it is, stay on the path. You're well on the way to success. If it isn't, well, get ready for the ride, because it's already cast in cement. Two states, that is Texas and California, are already minority controlled. The minority population in both California and Texas is larger than the white population. And many other states are on the verge of following suit. So that means that you're going to have more white flight. More people, more whites will move out of Los Angeles, which will turn Los Angeles then to Mexico City North. Now you see what happens when white flight occurs in Oakland, California, Richmond, California, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C. It turns them into hell holes of poverty. And it's not going to get better, it's going to get worse. And so brace for it. Now what they're telling us now, the purpose behind all of this is to benefit these minorities. It doesn't benefit the minorities. If it did, we would be accomplishing at least half. We'd be paying a fortune, but we would be accomplishing half of our mission. As you can see here, the colleges and universities are admitting more blacks, but they're not more black Americans, they're more black Africans. And it's being paid for at the cost of the poor people of the country and the middle class. Poor and middle class are the ones that pay the taxes. Now, the problem with all of this is that our now spurned laws were originally intended to ensure an admittedly thin veneer of civilization over innate chaos, roads full of drivers who have passed a minimum test to ensure that they're not a threat to others, single-family resident zoning to ensure that there are adequate sewer, garbage, and water services for everyone, periodic county inspections to ensure that untethered dogs are licensed and free of disease and that housing is wired and plumbed properly to prevent mayhem, and a consensus on school taxes to ensure that there are enough teachers in classrooms for such sudden spikes in student populations. Well, at the same time, focus has turned more to the U.S.-born children of Mexican illegal immigrants in whom illiteracy and illegitimacy, school dropout rates, and criminal activity have risen to such levels that no longer can we simply dismiss Mexican immigration as resembling the more problematic but eventually successful Italian model of a century ago. Then, large numbers of Southern European Catholics, mostly without capital and without education, arrived en masse from Italy and Sicily. They lived in ethnic enclaves, and for several decades they lagged behind the majority population in educational achievement. They also lagged behind in income and avoidance of crime, before achieving financial parity as well as full assimilation and intermarriage. Well, since 1990, the number of poor Mexican Americans has climbed 52%, a figure that skewed U.S. poverty rates. Billions of dollars spent on our own poor will not improve our poverty statistics when 1 million of the world's poorest cross our border every year. The number of impoverished black children has dropped 17% in the last 16 years, but the number of Hispanic poor has gone up 43%. We don't like to talk of illegitimacy, but here again, the ripples of illegal immigration reach the U.S.-born generation. Half of the births to Hispanic Americans were illegitimate, 42% higher than the general rate of the American population. Illegitimacy is higher in general in Mexico than in the United States, but the force multiplier of illegal status, lack of English, and an absence of higher education means that the children of Mexican immigrants have illegitimacy rates even higher than those found in either Mexico or the United States. And then finally, another negative aspect of illegal immigration that very few realize is the impact it is having on congressional reapportionment. Remember, the Census Bureau counts all people for determining representative apportionment. You know, not just citizens. As a result, there is a shift of political power going on from the states with lower illegal alien populations to states with higher illegal alien populations, as noted in a Center for Immigration Studies article, remaking the political landscape. The impact of illegal and legal immigration on congressional apportionment is detailed in the chart at the right. Note that the 18-seat swing from mostly the Rust Belt states to the Sun Belt. Now, you can expect more of this after the 2010 census. And if we continue counting foreign nationals for congressional representation, something that I'm sure the founders did not intend when they put the enumeration requirement in our Constitution, all of this massive collateral damage from a victimless crime so that we can save 10 cents on a head of lettuce. Well, now, take a look at these numbers here. California picked up in the 2000 census 6 more seats. Florida 1, New York 1, Texas 1, for a total of 9. At the expense of 1 seat each in Indiana, Kentucky, Michigan, Mississippi, Montana, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, Utah, and Wisconsin. Now, that's pretty significant because already in American politics, we see this Hispanic vote. Now, remember, by the year 2050, and we're just talking 40 years into the future now, that's one generation in biblical terms, the whites in America will number half the population and all others will number the other half. You may rest assured that some of the whites are going to vote on the minority side, which will always give the minorities a majority vote in whatever political process that they want to advance for their political agenda. The political agenda of Hispanics and of immigrants into the United States is going to take over and change the country. Now, in Israel, the Jews recognize that problem, that if they were to assimilate the Palestinians into the population and into the politics of Israel, that the Jews would be outvoted. And so that's why you have to have a two-state solution. The Palestinians have to have their own state. So now the argument is, well, who's going to get what ground? Now, here in the United States, we're not talking about a two-state solution where we can say, well, okay, all of you Mexicans take over Texas and the rest of us will take over the rest of the country. Oh, no, no, no. Now, let me show you how this works because you just saw it happen in the 2000 election. Al Gore had 5 million more votes than George Bush and lost the election. And he lost the election because in this country we have a thing called the Electoral College. Actually, the Electoral College was designed for the express purpose of protecting minorities, which is precisely what the Mexicans are doing, what the Hispanics are doing. They're protecting the minority. That's what it's designed to do. It is to give everybody a representative vote. So, for instance, in the creamery, Humboldt Creamery Association, they had about 500 dairymen that were putting milk into the creamery. But they decided that the voting shares in the creamery, since it was a co-op, would be decided upon how many pounds of milk you're putting into the creamery. So, for instance, Bill Trutelli, he had 100 cows, and he put in, you know, maybe 10,000 pounds a day. So he would get 10 votes. Francis Capini, he put in 10,000 pounds a day, he got 10 votes. George Gordon had 30 cows and he put in 3,000 pounds a day and he got 3 votes. In other words, the more milk you put in, the more votes you get. Well, the bigger states then get a bigger share of the vote. So in the 2000 election, Florida has 25 votes and Utah has 3. So the majority of people in Utah voted for George Bush and he got all 3 votes. In Florida, the majority of people voted for George Bush, but just barely, 535 more people voted for him than voted for Al Gore, and so he got all 25 votes. So that gave him 28 votes in those two states. Now, Al Gore up in New York, where they had 25 votes, he got the majority vote up there, and he got the majority vote in a big way, big way. And so he got 5 million votes, and George Bush got 3 million votes. So when it was all said and done, Al Gore got all 20 of their votes, their Electoral College votes. Then another state over here, let's say in Delaware, where Al Gore got all 3 votes, he won 2 states, and he got 23 votes, and George Bush got 2 states, and he got 28 votes. But when you tally up the popular vote, Al Gore gets more votes than George Bush, but George Bush wins the election. So in states like California and Texas, which are controlled now by the Latino population, the votes of all of the rest of the people in the country are held hostage by the fact that those two states having the biggest populations. They may only go Latino by a few votes of the popular vote, but they've got the big vote in the Electoral College. So tuck that away in your pocket, because over the long haul, they've got more political clout for the size of their population than does the majority of the people in the country. And that's what counts. Joe Stalin hit the nail on the head when speaking of democracy. He said, it's not who votes that counts. It's who counts the votes that counts. Didn't we see that in Florida? It was the Republicans counting the votes in Florida, wasn't it? Yeah, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, now there's another element that comes into the game here. It's poverty. Poverty. Before I get to poverty here, which is in another article, let me give you this article again in case you want to check this out. Go to the web, and you're looking for www.usillegalaliens.com. Now, that's all one word. usillegalaliens.com is all one word. And you're looking for impacts of illegal immigration, American, and so on. It's called The Dark Side of Illegal Immigration, Facts, Figures, and Statistics on Illegal Immigration. Again, that's www.usillegalaliens.com. And The Dark Side of Illegal Immigration. All right, now here's another little kicker. The President of the United States knows all of that which I have just reported to you, and so does every member of Congress. And if they don't, then they're incompetent. Remember, I'm not the sharpest marble in the drawer, never claimed to be, and if a plumber can get the information, so can you. I'm not here to tell you to open the borders or close them off. It's irrelevant to me. I just wanted to report the facts, and then you can make up your own mind as to what you want to do. Now remember, every time you make a decision in life, there's an outcome that comes from that. And then that outcome, such as the immigration policies that we're following today, were created by the Great Society administration of John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Baines Johnson. It was done in the Kennedy administration. The act was passed in 1964, just after Kennedy died. And it has been followed from 1964 until today. Now they're talking about changing. And as I pointed out to you on the subject matter here, I think it was yesterday, let me see what it is, population. Yeah, population growth headed to a billion. And you see, once you've got this thing in operation, you brought in the 30 years from 1964 to 1994, in that 30 years, you brought in all of these Hispanics. Then those Hispanics from 1994 to 04 and 14, you know, they're reproducing. So the 30 million are going to produce 60 million. The 60 million are going to produce 120 million, and the 120 million are going to produce 240 million, and so on up the line. That's what geometric progression is all about. And in order to stop this 1 billion population growth by the year 1975, you'd have to deport all of those Hispanics that came into the country between 1964 and 1994. Now, what do you think the chances of that happening are going to be? So when our Creator told us segregation was the rule of law, and we got that in Genesis 11, do you remember that? And we said, no, we're going to practice integration. All right. Now you practiced integration, and there is a conclusion to that matter. And so your creator told you, he said, okay, now based upon that conclusion, based upon the numbers, based upon human beings interacting and breeding and reproducing, the stranger, the Mexicans and Latinos, that are within your gate will rise up very high above you and bring you down very low. It's a cause and effect reaction. If you run this ship at 23 knots into 5,000 square miles of icebergs, you will strike an iceberg, rip a 300-foot hole down the side of the ship, and it'll sink in 2 hours and 20 minutes, even if the ship is unsinkable. There was a cause and effect relationship with the Titanic and the iceberg, and there's a cause and effect relationship between us and our God, and there's a cause and effect relationship between us, our government, and our immigration policy. Now, we selected the immigration policy in 1964. We followed it through until today, and now it's going to have a conclusion. Two states, California and Texas, already are minority states. They already have more minority population than white. Remember, in 1960, now America was 90% white and 10% all others. Today, it's 67% white and 33% all others, and it's headed for 50-50 in 2050. And I forgot the numbers now, but by the time we hit a billion in 1970 or 2075, we'll be down to around a third white and two-thirds all others. And so get ready for the ride, because here it comes. Now, there's one more factoid that comes in here, and that deals with poverty. Poverty. You can sit here today and say, well, I'm not poor and I'm not suffering from poverty. Okay, but you're going to. Remember, the prophecy says that I'm going to bring you down very low. The stranger that's within your gates is going to bring you down very low. Here's why. Education in the United States, roughly half have entered the country illegally. Poorly educated immigrants impose large costs on U.S. taxpayers. Any taxes that they pay are greatly outweighed by the costs of the government benefits that they consume. The National Academy of Sciences has estimated that the average immigrant without a high school degree will impose a net cost of nearly $100,000 on U.S. taxpayers over the course of his or her life. So every time one of these Mexicans comes into the country, in whatever guise, over the course of his lifetime is going to cost the taxpaying public $100,000 to subsidize him, which is about the equivalent to saying, well, let's take on a $100,000 debt by going to college and signing up for this school finance program. The day you graduate from college, you're going to have a $100,000 debt to pay off. So every time you bring one of these people in here, you've got a $100,000 debt to pay off over the course of his life. Now, you can sit there and jump up and down, paw the ground, bite the bushes, and say, why, that racist Gordon doesn't have anything to do with race. It has to do with education. It has to do with Bible prophecy. It has to do with immigration policy. Has to do with integration and segregation. Now, God separated all the races back at the Tower of Babel. He put the Mexicans in Mexico, and he put the Indians here, and he put other people there, blah, blah, blah. He put the Chinese over in China. He said, now keep it that way. And we came along and said, no, no, 1,000 times no. Let us show you, God, how to handle race relations. All right. It's the racial policies that have been adopted by the politicians. It's not the racial policies adopted by God. Going on. This means that the 6 million immigrants lacking a high school diploma and legally residing in the United States today will cost taxpayers more than $500 billion over their lifetimes. Now, that's the legals, the ones you brought in, gave them a green card, gave them citizenship, they swore allegiance, they're out working there, they're getting their minimum wage payments, but because of their low educational skills. Moreover, if the 5 million illegal immigrants who lack a high school education are granted amnesty and citizenship as being proposed by the Bush administration and legislated in a Senate-passed immigration bill called S-2611, then the overall cost would rise considerably. The overall net cost to government of immigrants without a high school diploma could reach $1 trillion or more. Then, if the cost of educating these immigrants' children is included, the figure will reach $2 trillion. All right, now, George Bush, when he proposed that we give these 5 million illegal immigrants amnesty, bring them in, he knows what the cost of that's going to be. And so does every member of Congress. And when I turn on my TV at night, and or C-SPAN, and they turn on, and you got some senator or representative, and he's standing up there at the podium, and he's just speaking eloquently, and he's trying to persuade his fellow senators and representatives that they should listen to him, and that he's telling them the gospel. That's as phony as a $3 bill. Those people are hypocrites to the nth degree. Are you telling me that a guy gets up there at the podium and he spouts off these numbers like I'm doing to you right now, and the other members that he's talking to haven't already got this report in spades? He's the only guy there in the House of Representatives that has this valuable information. The rest of them are all ignorant. They know They're just all dumb. They don't know this. Boys and girls, if your representative is dumb and doesn't have these numbers in front of him, he needs to be voted out because he's ignorant, he's a fool, and because he's incompetent. And if he does have these numbers, and he's in the House, and he's voting for this, or he's supporting this kind of immigration policy over here, he needs to be voted out because he's stupid, he's incompetent, and more than likely, he is a traitor. He's working for somebody else's agenda. He's not working for you. Now, the average Joe Sixpack doesn't understand the difference between the Italian immigrant coming in 1900 and the Mexican immigrant coming in 2000. The Italian immigrant, when he came in, he was ignorant. He couldn't read and write. Like Frank Rocha, I've mentioned to you, he came in 1922, couldn't read and write. He went to work on a dairy, took somebody's job, but he saved his money, he bought a dairy, and by the time he died, he had $1 million. He was illiterate when he got here, he was illiterate when he checked out. But he never cost anybody a dime because there was never 10 cents worth of taxpayer money that he ever collected. The man lived between 1922 and 1971 in the United States of America and never cost the taxpaying public one thin dime, not a dime. He never collected anything from government, no subsidies. He paid taxes the whole time he was here. Conversely, the legal or illegal immigrant who comes into the United States today because of our social welfare system is collecting off of the public. And he's collecting more than he's paying in. That's the difference. Now, we could abolish welfare, and indeed I would contend that we should do that. Then you could open your borders, and then you wouldn't have this drain on the public treasury. You'd have a different dynamic. But you see, you've opened your borders now, and you've got this social welfare system in place. You've already signed up and agreed to support these people. And as I mentioned the other day, you can take one of these moms from Caracas. All she needs is an airplane ticket from Caracas to Miami. And the day she arrives in Miami, she can just walk into the hospital in labor and say, here, deliver the baby. Not only will we deliver the baby, we will deliver it at taxpayer expense, create an anchor baby from which she can no longer be deported. She can now bring her entire family into the United States. Who created these laws? Well, it was the Kennedy and Johnson administration back in the 1960s during the Great Society Administration. Now, that's what you're living with today. Now, they're talking about reform. You're going to reform this. Well, you'd have to go back and reform the act itself back in 1964, and you're not going to do that. You're going to get some reforms, but that's what you voted for. Remember when Barack Obama said, hey, what America wants is change. Vote me in, and you'll get change. Well, he didn't lie to you. He's giving you change. It's what you wanted, and it's what you're getting. Now, similarly, a draft immigration plan outlined by Congressman Mike Pence, Republican of Indiana, could be criticized as a de facto amnesty program and would permit an unlimited inflow of immigrants in future years, all of whom would be put on a path to eventual citizenship. Like the Senate immigration bill, the Pence plan would greatly increase low-skill immigration, leading to increased poverty and substantially increased costs for the U.S. taxpayer. Let me ask you people this. If unlimited immigration is not a problem today. Now, America's population is about 300 million. Let's do this. Why don't we invite in 300 million Chinese? They've got 1.25 billion over there. Why don't we just go over to China and say, hey, look, you people over here have too many people and we don't have enough. So we would like to bring in 300 million. You just select any 300 million that you want to get rid of. Put them on a boat, ship them to America, we'll take them all. What would you think of that? It would double our population to 600 million. You think that's a good plan? What do you think would happen if you did that? Why don't we just open our borders to the south and say, look, all of you people in Uruguay, Paraguay, Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, El Salvador, whatever, come on up to America. Just move in. What do you think the results of that would be? Well, you're going to get the same results over a longer period of time. Longer period, 65 years, we can do the same thing. You're going to have a dramatic change in your culture. And you're not going to have white America. You're going to have something else, whatever it turns out to be. Now, if that's what you want here, the thing that makes Sweden Sweden is because it's full of Swedes. The minute you Swedes over there open your borders to unlimited immigration from, let's say, Russia, or let's say Poland, or let's pick Black Africa or China, you're going to have something different up there. You're not going to have a Sweden. You're going to have something different than that. Your culture is going to change. Your politics are going to change. Your economics are going to change. Now, if that's what you want, open your borders and bring them in. And if that isn't what you want, then you got to keep her closed. See, I've got a farm here, and my farm's closed to everybody except Gordon's. And we have our own culture. We have our own way of life here. And I live next to a guy named Uchman. And Uchman, he's got the Uchman farm. And the Uchmans, they have a different take on life and different customs and different practices than we have. That's what makes Uchman different from Gordon. And he doesn't open his farm to the Gordons, and I don't open my farm to the Uchmans. But we live side by side. We buy, sell, and trade with one another. We do business with one another. Now, immigrants and their families now comprise one out of four poor Americans, and poor immigrants pay little in taxes and consume large levels of government services, including medical care, welfare, and public education. The increase in poverty due to immigration can impose costs well beyond the immediate cost of current welfare benefits for immigrants. By magnifying the public perception of poverty, immigration can create political leverage for new anti-poverty programs. Immigration-induced poverty can easily have spillover effects, resulting in new government entitlements for all poor Americans. Okay, let's think about that for a minute. The Mexicans in Los Angeles County who are on welfare all vote, and they want to vote for more welfare. Now, a couple of programs back, we took a look at the impact that that's having on businesses in California. And many of those businesses in California are moving out. And that's because when you take a small business, a mom-and-pop business, and that's what most of these are, just small mom-and-pop type businesses over here, you have to have more regulation to impose more taxes. The people are told they want to have clean air. Well, if you pack 11 million people into a small, densely concentrated area, you're going to have more air pollution, aren't you? All right, and so now the businesses that are there, some of those businesses, for instance, like the Cal Portland Cement Company has announced in late 2009 the closure of its Riverside County plant because of new environmental regulations from a state law, AB 32. The company's CEO wrote, quote, "A cement plant cannot be picked up and moved, but the next new plant probably will not be built in California, meaning more good, high-paying manufacturing jobs will be lost to Nevada or China or somewhere else." Now, if you enact this legislation in California against this cement plant, and you say, well, we got to have cleaner air for the people of Los Angeles. Well, okay. You got to have cleaner air, but you don't need cleaner air in Nevada, and that's where they're going to build their next plant. So the 600 jobs that are in Riverside are going to Nevada. Just make up your minds to it. Which then is going to mean 600 fewer jobs, and so the people that are on welfare are going to have 600 fewer people paying taxes into the general pool to support those 600 people. So the people who are paying the taxes have a higher burden to support the same number of people in welfare. But it's worse than that. And you see, California's welfare costs are going up because you got more and more immigrants coming in. You see, 3 million immigrants in California aren't enough. They're shooting for 6. And as soon as you reach 6 million of these immigrants, then your welfare costs are going to double. And that means that more and more of these businesses have to pay more and more taxes, which means that more and more of these businesses have to raise their prices in order to generate the revenue. And you see, the people that are on welfare aren't producers. They're not productive. They're consumers, but they're not producers. Now, everybody is a consumer, but not everybody is a producer. So down here in my raised beds, I've got 6 of them. I can go down there and plant garlic. It takes some time, effort, and energy, labor, and sweat equity. But I can plant in my 390 square feet of bed. Let's see, we've got 360 feet long, and I can get 120 plants. And then it's 6.5 feet wide, so I can get 13. I can plant 1,560 garlic plants in that raised bed. And when I harvest that garlic, it will produce approximately 10 times as much as I planted. So times 10 would give me 15,600 cloves of garlic. Well, 15,600 cloves of garlic, assuming that you use, one clove of garlic a week, and that would be 52 cloves of garlic per person per year. So let's divide that by 52. That would feed 300 people. It would supply the garlic needs for 300 people for a year. I could do that. I could plant that bed in about, 6 hours. And I could harvest that bed probably in another 12 hours. So 12 man hours of my time. That's what productivity is all about. Now, if you've got the 300 people that are on welfare sitting on their couches eating potato chips and watching TV, they're not planting any garlic, are they? They're consuming my garlic, because I'm the garlic producer. How many of those welfare people are producing garlic, potatoes, producing motorcycles or automobiles, producing electric power, televisions, shoes, shirts, pants, belts? And the thing that makes everybody's standard of living higher is the productivity that everybody else is working on or producing and putting into the passing stream of goods and services. Now, the low-educated fellow, he's doing something for us. He's out here picking our lettuce. And indeed, somebody needs to pick the lettuce, just like somebody needs to plant and pick the garlic. And those people are the producers. Now, if those people are producing and they consume less than they produce, then they are profitable. If they consume more than they produce, then they are unprofitable. See how simple this is getting? That's all there is to economics. How much do you produce? How much do you consume? How much surplus do you have? That's a profit. Conversely, how much do you produce? How much do you consume? And then how much shortage is there? And that tells you that, hey, something right here. And we've got to solve that problem. Now, here in America, to give you an illustration, if you take a look at the amount of money that's in our economy and the amount of goods and services that are over here on the shelf, here's what it works out to be. If all 300 million of us went in and spent our money tomorrow, we could all share 2%. That's how much we have in the way of goods on the shelf, 2%. The other 98 cents that you have can't be spent because there's nothing to spend it on. It doesn't exist yet. It hasn't been produced. What our fondest desires are is to have lots of money and somebody else producing all the goods so that we can spend our money buying those goods but produce nothing in return. That's what all of us want to do. I don't want to produce anything, and I want to consume a bunch. Now, unfortunately, in the real world, that doesn't work because we're all lazy, and none of us want to produce, and I'm only going to produce that which I have to, no more. I'll produce for myself, but I'm not producing for you. Unless you produce something that I want, then I will produce some extra so that I can trade it to you for what you have extra so that I can have what I want and you can have what you want. That's what makes the economy. Now, by importing all of these people into the country and they're producing less than they consume, it means that we all stand in line to share that shortage. And that's what God was talking about when he said, the stranger that's within your gate will rise up high above you and bring you down very low, so that we can all share the shortage. Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week and has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, we're about out of time. I'm going to have to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.